and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, we have another terrific show dealing with spirituality, metaphysics, anything that I would say is related to God. And it should be an interesting show from the standpoint that today's show is about what at least 10% of the people who talk to me want to have some question in relationship to it answered. And that is, how do I reverse my negative karma? Okay. And you might say, well, how do people know if they have negative karma anyway? And I'll go into that. But this is the one of the subjects that a lot of people have questions about, because we all, I think, believe that one way or another, because of various negative things that go off in our life, or go on in our life, that there must be something we did or something we did at some time, maybe not in the recent times, to have brought about this particular negative effect. And let's start with that idea. So I think that to get people to the point where they have some, we'll say, clarity about this, let's talk about karma in general. Karma is the resolution of cause and effect. For every action in the universe, there's going to be something that also is going to be affected through that. And it's improbable, if not impossible, that we're going to have circumstances that are not related to some other circumstance. Now, to understand this in a very simple way, just think about the idea, as people claim, throwing a rock into a pond and watching the waves, which are ripple effects, moving outward. Well, if you throw a bunch of rocks in all over the place, each ripple effect has an effect on all the other ripple effects. And before long, you have a system, you might say, of interactions between one rock and another rock. Think about the rock as being some impact coming from something that doesn't produce a part of God's plan, but produces some antithesis or negative effect against God's plan in general. But we know that God's plan includes free will. We know it includes the ability to grow and create. We know it has all these things in it if you've listened to some prior shows. So the plan isn't necessarily that, gee, because you created something and it didn't turn out to be exactly as godly as you wanted it to, there's going to be terrible consequences. No, that's not exactly what this means. It just means that there's going to be impacts or forces related to the fact that not everything we do is perfect, and therefore some force is developed. Now, you might say, is that karma? Not necessarily. Because we work together, and because each of us shares some responsibility for others, and because some people, in good faith, meaning that they are trying to be a follower of what they believe is godly thought, and as many times as good as they might be able to do, but sometimes not as good as they could do, but still not terrible, they create some level of selfishness in themselves that reduces some of their future issues by the forces created. The forces are like a lot of rocks falling in and the ripples moving across and having an effect on them. That in itself does not necessarily mean there's karma, because other people are doing the same thing, and in some circumstances there's some canceling out of one person's mistakes or selfishness versus another. And so karma isn't necessarily the major issue about forces. A lot of people think that it is, but it usually is not. The real major issue about forces is about being selfish in general, and that does produce forces against us. The forces against us is not necessarily what I mean when I'm talking about karma. And let me explain again further what karma actually is. Karma is the collection of events that are separated to a large extent by some significant order of time. That amount of time between when the event took place, the first cause of whatever was taking happening, and when it comes to fruition, is the karma. Karma comes about because not only do people make mistakes, but they continue to make the mistakes, and they may engross themselves in it. They may want to or choose to become the embodiment of their own mistakes as a creation of themselves. Then karma becomes a real issue. Because unlike just a force that slows somebody up, makes their life more difficult, produces some level of degradation in sense, and forces the person, therefore, to suffer to some extent, karma does not necessarily involve any of those things. Karma, in theory, does not have to have an immediate effect on forces, and in some circumstances, prevents forces, if it's truly evil, from becoming enacted on the person who is, quote-unquote, more deliberately and more, even far more egregiously, being against God and against the will of God, thoughts of God, God's plan, and all the goodness that they experience in life. Wow. So this may sound to you a little heretical in its approach, because it sounds like, gee, haven't you said that people get bad karma? Well, they can get bad karma, but bad karma really is, if you're going to look at it from a more objective viewpoint, an effect of motive and time, and the separation of time for long periods, that leads to the serious things we call, or we use the word negative karma in reference to. Karma is neither negative or positive in the sense that it is trying to resolve the separation of time and space. And it does, it wants to resolve the overall condition of forces as well, which I brought up earlier, but it doesn't do so as much directed at a specific person as forces do. Forces are really about what we do on a daily basis. Karma is what we do daily, weekly, monthly, even very much erratically, but with greater will, more motivation, and we'll say greater levels of selfishness. This is where karma and the negative karma that most people think of is the actual factors that we're going to be discussing tonight. Okay, so I've kind of redefined a little bit karma for some people, because we're going deeper into this issue than I have in prior shows and discussing it, because if we're going to really talk about reversing negative karma, we have to have a better understanding of what I mean by it and what I think is really happening in people's lives. So just because you made some mistakes yesterday, and today and tomorrow and the next day, you feel some forces as a result of those mistakes, and you suffer for the next few weeks as a result of them, that's not what I mean by negative karma. As a matter of fact, just the speed at which it's happening in most circumstances almost proves it's not negative karma. It's just the forces that happen as a almost direct result of our selfishness. Negative karma is something that could be months, years, lifetimes away, and it is delayed rather than coming on quickly, like a day or so. It's going to come much later, and it has more ominous effects on suffering, on people's, we'll say, their overall experience of life and the meaning they get from it. It will definitely distort those things much more than the forces that generally come from our everyday mistakes or selfishness. Karma does have force involved in it, but its more serious issue is not that the force coming to us is commensurate to the level of the selfishness, but the force coming to us is commensurate to the effect of our prior selfishness on other parts of life, including people. Let me say that again, because that's a very important difference. Okay, you're out in the wilderness, and you decide that you got cold, you want to light a fire, right? And you light the fire, but it keeps going out because you're not using dry enough wood, and you're also not, you didn't bring enough matches, and eventually you run out of those, and you got very cold, and you suffer from the coldness, and you got this problem and that problem, and I don't know. Those are all forces produced by certain levels of selfishness coming from a lack of planning prior to what you did. And maybe a few people might suffer who came along with you in this journey of folly. So you could say all of you are experiencing the forces because each of you had some opportunity to plan and none of you chose the right method. Those are fairly direct forces from an existing circumstance, and we're not really falling to my definition of karma, right? Now, you work in a match factory, and you really are disliking your boss and the matches that are being produced, and you have a general angst about some people anyway, particularly the turkeys, to take off from work and go camping. So you figure, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave a little bit of the phosphorus too low in the matches to get them ignited. Once they get a fire going, they can start the match, but it won't start when you just strike it. And you say, well, that'll fix them. Well, the problem with that type of experience is you can't say that you're going to have any forces from that particular behavior yourself because you're not going camping. You're not even going to use the matches that are the brand that you're going to use. But you're going to have negative karma. It may not come right away. But as it turns out, several people use those matches and they go out and freeze to death. Others use them and they get hurt in some fashion or another. And others just have very difficult times. And the numbers could be staggering. You could have an effect on hundreds of thousands of people from your activity at the match factory. Now, it could be years. It could be a whole lifetime before the karma from that specific behavior now strikes you. And it doesn't strike you as a direct force coming from the fact that you may match it that way. As a matter of fact, it may have absolutely nothing to do with matches, but it may have a lot to do with the kind of selfishness and hatred and anger you had towards your boss and the place you worked and the people who go out camping and other kinds of activities that are leisure in or related to that. All of those things come together and they have an effect that changes the motives of the person by punishing those motives with extreme vengeance. How much? Usually at least three times that of the suffering of all the people affected. Oh, you say, wait a sec, some people died. Some people suffered this level, that level, and three times that amount, all coming together against the person who did it, or people. Wow. That's not just getting some forces, is it? That's like getting trampled on. That's like having really, really bad things happen to you. And when does this happen? Well, this is the weird part about karma. The shorter the time between the grievous bad motive event and the preceding stuff that takes place after that event into new events that are negative karma, the shorter the time, the going to be the shortened time is going to happen because the motivation was not so extreme and the results were not so hideous on other life. Take it to a much more severe level, where it's going to affect the lives of huge numbers of people, and you haven't done anything to offset this, we'll get to that part, the results could be 10 times or more. All the harm you caused all the folks hitting you within a very short period of time that it hit you, but maybe years or lifetimes from when you first did this terrible thing. That's negative karma. And you can see how that is really way different than the folks who come and say, well, I got a flat tire today. And I said, well, did you check your tires yesterday? No, didn't check them. did you drive down the street with a lot of nails on it? Matter of fact, I did. Okay. So you got a flat tire, and you did all those things. So you got forces because you were too lazy, selfish, and not caring about nails in the street for not only your car, but for other people's cars, and everything else. So there you go. Okay. Those are the forces. Is that negative karma? Well, not really. Not in the truest sense of how I'm trying to define the differences here. Karma involves the motive. Was the motive of the person to drive down the street? Yeah, they didn't care about the nails, but they didn't really want to have other people get flat tires. Not really. That wasn't their motive. Their motive was that they didn't want to go through any extra efforts to get rid of nails or even report it to anybody. You see what I'm talking about? Whereas the person who says, oh, I'm not even going to drive down the street myself, but I'll make sure everybody else gets a flat tire because I'm not going to report it. Matter of fact, I'll even tell everybody to take that street that I don't like. Yeah, you can see where we're going with this. Negative karma is a really big deal. And if you have a lot of it, you're going to have a really lousy life. Because when the negative karma hits, it's overwhelming. And it should be a wake-up call. Now, is it? Generally not. Because the same selfishness that causes the person to do all these negative things, even when they absolutely are told and know better not to do something, they do it anyway. Those are the bad things. The results then can be either overwhelmingly bad things or a series of constant bad things. I mean, each one individually being overwhelming, but collectively it's overwhelming. You know, it's one day after another of bad, seriously bad things. And you can say, well, I'm not really doing much in my life, so how can I be creating so much negative karma? Well, because that isn't what we mean by negative karma. It would mean that, yeah, you're not doing so many bad things that you could be developing a force of this nature every day, another. But you could have a lot of negative karma that really makes your life terrible. Okay. Is some of this starting to make sense? I hope so, because this is a very difficult subject. So difficult that most people, when I try to explain this to them, they get angry at me. Like, what do you mean? My motives are okay. What do you mean I was a lousy son of a gun some time ago? It's difficult for people to accept this level of responsibility. It's easier to accept forces. Oh, well, okay, I was selfish yesterday, I admit to it, so what? But when you have a consistency, an overwhelming consistency of negative things, that is a sign of something else. Now, is negative karma punishment? Do we have a punishing God? I mean, if you read some parts of the Old Testament, the Judaic, and it's also considered part of the Christian tradition as well, is Judaic Bible says, well, God, the vengeance of God is mine, and I will do these things to you. Then those are the people who wrote that may have known what negative karma was, but they didn't want to let other people know about it in that way, or they chose not to, or couldn't have. Maybe. They didn't have an understanding. But God is not vengeful. The universe is remarkably well-balanced. to prevent the spread of evil, there's the necessity of having negative karma. Negative karma affects evil the least for most of its existence because all of the huge amounts of forces that are gathered to come and get it, it manages to abate and to use against still others to steal power from those others to act as a shield against the remaining negative forces. That's the trick of evil. It is a Ponzi kind of thing, or another way to put it, a pyramid marketing kind of thing, where they are attempting to get more and more power to deal with greater levels of karma that keep growing outside of their ability eventually to get power. And so the system eventually has to fail for them. And God knew this coming in. God said, sure, you want to go ahead and evil, do what you want, fine, but, you know, it's a fool's journey. But if you want to go down it, go ahead. Now, because negative karma is not forces per se, it has forces involvement, but it's not forces per se, evil could go thousands of years and not experience forces to the point where it doesn't even know what a force is anymore that it would experience. It uses force against everyone else, but it doesn't experience them. And by not experiencing force, evil condemns itself, because it becomes unprepared to deal with the force that eventually builds beyond its ability to convert the negative karma into power, for using power against others to have the negative karma affect the others instead of itself. It eventually is overcome by the system, and it kills its bodies and senses, and disallows its use of those bodies and senses, but it still maintains some level of human-like consciousness, and has to live untold lifetimes at lower levels of life forms, with senses diminished to such small amounts that its consciousness only suffers a lack of meaning for literally millions of years. Up to millions of years. So you can see that this is really a bigger deal than it sounds like on the surface. Now, negative karma is a condition of revitalizing the universe and doing away with eventually evil and correcting those things which are most obstinate against God. Okay, so what's the most terrible things that humans can do? Because after all, we got to talk about karma in terms of motive, and motive means you have to know God to be against God. The motive always has to be in some way against God. All right? Got that? So you can't have negative karma if you're an ant. Because you have your consciousness about God is non-existent, so you can't be held responsible for doing something that is against God if you have no clue what God is. But if you're evil, you specifically, by definition, want to destroy God. Because you want to be the big cheese, you want to be bigger than God, and God is standing in your way, in your mind. Not true, but it's your mind. So you're going to get rid of God, and now you're going against, through motive, God, and now you've got a big, big negative karma coming on. But you may not notice it for a long time. Thousands and thousands and thousands of years can go by, and these evil dudes can hang around. They actually live, not in the physical world, but they live as a pseudo-soul. They have a connection with a group soul, but they're not really, they don't have any connection to like a human soul anymore. And they live as their own soul, so to speak, in the lowest part of the astral subworld, called the eighth sphere. And the reason they like that place so much is because they're invisible to all the parts of light. They're invisible. They have visibility to each other because they don't see or experience anything through light. They do it through darkness. So it's a kind of, we'll call it a convenient escape and a way of avoiding the consequences of a seriously adverse, terrible behavior for a very long time by our standards. And God says, fine, go ahead. You're free to do it. But the universe is stacked against them by a far great margin. And ultimately, the negative karma is what knocks these things out. It also knocks out anyone who's even tinkering with being evil. So the good news is you don't have to go all the way to evil before you get serious amounts of negative karma. And that's like the wake-up call for some folks. Some folks, they're pretty thick-headed, and it doesn't wake them up. They just go down their merry way, keep doing the stuff that's most worst. So the worst thing you'd be doing is trying to destroy God, and destroying God means destroying not just God, because God is all of life, but destroying the growth of God, which is what grows God, growth of life, I should say, which grows God, and also destroying those who are most emphatically attempting to assist God or trying to live virtuously and trying to do good things. So the one of the worst things you can do is, if you really want to get a lot of negative karma, is to go after the really good folks. Then you got not a negative karma. Now, the interesting thing, it doesn't mean that good folks are completely protected from negative karma, because they can't be. The system has to be open, because God doesn't want to use determinism to force the change. So ultimately, the only thing that can happen here in the long run is that bad things happen to good people, because there are bad people who incite tremendous negative karma and bring the forces to bear upon others for a time being. Now, you could say, well, oh, Zach, I thought karma was supposed to be fair. It is. Let me explain. Let's say you're a good person. But even in all the goodness that you got, you just have a few problems. One of them is you can't see, understand, or believe in evil. You're a Pollyanna, right? That's kind of by definition. Right? You're a spiritual Pollyanna. Okay, so, by the way, about over half of the present planet Earth's population of human beings is in this camp. So, then you say, well, what's so bad about that? So you can't see evil. Well, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, etc. Well, yeah, there's one problem, and that is that evil has the right to victimize you when you can't comprehend it, when you can't understand it, when you can't sense it. It is free to do what it wants to you. Then, although it gets all the negative karma from it, from what it chooses to do to you, all the forces eventually will. But at the same time, you suffer too. How come people suffer because they're ignorant and because they have a lack of awareness and they're not, they have specifically a lack of consciousness about evil? Why would they suffer so much? Well, God said the only way I can make this system work is to let you learn. And if you're not willing to learn by understanding who I am, God, then you'll have to learn by eventually understanding what I'm not. Have you got that? Now, there's a key to this and a very important remedy. It turns out, and you've heard me speak about this in recent months, another show. It turns out that those people who follow God's thought strong enough to believe that there's evil because they believe in God, and they can see enough of God to know there is such a thing as evil, that protects them from most of the bad effects, most but not all, of evil. Isn't that amazing? They don't even have to fully understand evil. They just need to have a pretty good understanding of God, and that's good enough. But what about the folks who are atheists? I talked about this a few weeks ago. They've got a much bigger problem, and you've heard me say this, just as I'm going to say it tonight. Their problem is they don't believe in God. So they're much more likely to be adversely affected by evil. Starting to make sense. And since God says, look, I can't force you to believe in me. You know, you can do what you want. You're not a bad person. You do tend to do good things. But eventually, evil is going to get you. Because if you don't believe in God, eventually, you'll become victimized. How powerful is that? That's a biggie. That's a huge thing. Absolutely frightening. Now, what does that mean in terms of negative karma? Does that mean that people have the negative karma? No, it's not the same thing. People have a force that evil puts upon them. And it isn't exactly negative karma to the people. It's negative karma to the evil itself. But at most, it never grows more than 3 times the amount of the original karma. At most. Many times it doesn't even get to the double amount of work. So evil, they can handle it. But good people, but people that are good do have bad things happen to them. You can see what I'm saying. Now, people who are good and follow a life of creating more virtue or light, they have the best. It doesn't mean that bad things never happen to them, but the bad things that do happen to them end up in the long run as reversing and becoming good things with greater levels of meaning, even if at the moment they have some relatively small level. The folks with the more greater levels of suffering almost invariably either don't believe in God or they themselves have created some very bad things against God. And sometimes people are complex and they can do some good things in their life but do some really evil things. And evil things definitely are going to come with them. I know it's tough to buy into this because it takes you to a level of huge responsibilities we all are sharing. Karma also affects us from our country, the people we live around, our families, our group, our relationships, and our country and the world. So we are assuming some of the, assimilating some of this karma ourselves, even if we're not directly involved, because we're part of it. Most people don't live their life being affected mostly on an individual level, but most of the time, but not all of them. Fascinating stuff, I find it fascinating. All right, so we've got this strange effect from negative karma. And let's say someone does have, in their past, a bunch of negative karma, and they even can see it. Let's say someone was working with a bunch of good people and decided that he or she or they got jealous and didn't like what they were doing or whatever. They had some bad stuff. And so they decided to destroy the goodness that those folks were doing because they were against them, and to them, the things they were doing, they also became against, even though, oddly, they might admit those were good things, but still they have treacherous plans and terrible things. Well, that's negative karma. That's evil. And let's say that that person says, hey, I got it. I did this terrible thing. What do I do? Well, to reverse negative karma, you have to deal with the specific motive and the specific circumstances. And you've got to create good to reverse the bad you've done. You can't just go out and feed the poor or give blankets to the cold if freezing people in the street to undo some other kind of terrible thing you did. It doesn't work. You've heard me say that a lot of times, but I'll try to be clear in my show. So you can't do it that way because the negative karma you produced was evil, whereas it wasn't just like you made a mistake. You had a motive. You have to reverse the effects of that motive on so many others. Everybody you told, everybody that was adversely affected by your actions, everyone, because you're negative karma. And not to just a 2- or 3-fold, but up to a 10- or more-fold. Oh, it becomes so great, it's overbearing. Do you get out of it? Can you get out of that? let's say, well, I knew it's coming, but I haven't had it hit me yet. What will I do? Well, the first thing is, I'm going to say it before the break, the first thing is you cannot choose to change your negative karma because you don't want bad things to happen to you. Let me say it one more time. No matter how much you understand that terrible things are going to happen to you because you've done terrible things, that cannot be your motive for wanting to change the negative karma. With that thought in mind, I'm going to let you think about that. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. Now, we just started a couple of minutes late, but we'll make up for that at the end of the show. And I just want you to consider the last thing I just said, because so many people are saying, Yeah, you can't, because you're trying to change wrong motive with wrong motive. Guess what? It doesn't work. As a matter of fact, you get worse karma by doing that. Worse. It makes it worse. You're better off doing nothing. Nothing at all than to do what I just said. And so many people, I mean, I can't even count them, that have come to me, have actually said that's what they want to do. And I look at them, I said, that ain't going to work. Well, why not? I know I did these bad things. I don't want the results of them. What's wrong with that? Why can't I just change something and do something? I'll go do penance. I'll go to the Himalayas and live with the blankets, and I'll do this and that. I say, that's just going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. Why? Because your motive is wrong. What's wrong with my motive? You're doing it because you don't want bad things to happen to you. Oh. All right. Think about it. And we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes or so from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, the show is on reversing negative karma. And I guess I heard that I was being a little maybe too boisterous or something like that in my explanation. But there is some humor in this, and the humor is that the thing that people think they're trying to do to resolve their problem, because their focus is so much on themselves, is only going to make the problem worse. And how does it do that? Well, the more someone thinks about the problem but comes up with the wrong motive in solving it, the faster the problem approaches them. And the more forces they produce in the meantime before it does. So if that isn't a good enough reason to get your motive straight, I don't know when it is, really. I mean, this is a pretty serious issue. Okay, so hopefully I would hope most of the listeners to tonight's show would have that one pretty well down. Yeah, I got it. Okay. All right. So then, what do you have to be concerned about? What is the real way that you achieve this reversal of negative karma? Well, you've got to do it because you have severe regret for the harm you've caused to others. You have to have an awareness and an understanding of the harm that you did with a degree of, we'll say, grief and the desire to help reverse the negative effects on others that you've caused, and the willingness to do whatever is necessary to achieve such, regardless of whether it benefits you or not, and in most cases, it will do far from that. So this is the needed attitude, motive, that will achieve reversing negative karma. Also be aware that evil folks never come to that conclusion. Even while their bodies are, quote-unquote, crystallizingly breaking up, they're like crystals, and then they're starting to shatter, meaning that their senses are failing, and the bodies are failing, the senses are failing, and they have to revert to some lower form of life to even exist. But while that's happening, they actually have some time. It might only be days or weeks, but they have some time, and they still don't get it right. Because they say, okay, I'll be a good person. I'll do this and that and whatever. But they have the wrong motive. They're doing it only because they're frightened and their senses are being destroyed. Their life meaning is being sucked down the drain, and they know where they're headed, which is hell, for a very long time. And so they do not, and I don't mean that's hell in the way vernacular, like, you know, something we read about in books. I'm talking about hell as a real condition of mind. And so they are going to be suffering immensely. And they, you know, it's just because of their fears of that they say they'll change. But they're sincere in they will do it. But it doesn't work because they don't have anywhere near the right motive. And how come that's true? Why couldn't they have the right motive? Because they're not conscious enough. They don't understand enough. It's the same word. I just understand. Of the subject I'm talking about, to be able to make the change. You have to understand something before you're going to say, well, I'm going to change my motive, because that's not what I really want. What I really want is I want to help people. I want to help the life I hurt and destroyed. I'm going to try as much as possible to get all this darkness and bring light into it, and I'll do whatever it takes. They aren't there. No matter how hard they try, they have little understanding and virtually no desire to be as they would need to be to reverse their negative karma. All right, so now we get into some of the more nitty-gritty questions about this, and it's a kind of, a fascinating subject, because there is there are, I should say, very significant answers to these very long-timed issues and problems people have had with and about karma. So, I mean, the solutions, but the solutions are not the ones that people are seeking, much less have a comprehension and understanding about. So, how do you reverse negative karma? Well, there's really three parts to the puzzle. The first is that you've got to be willing to be sacrificial and to give up whatever is required or needed to help others that have been harmed, and some of these others are countless people you have no names for, help them to recover what you did to the instructor. You've got to have an understanding, consciousness, of all of the different connections of the destructive acts you made before. And that's quite encumbering and a huge task, because look at the person in the match factory. They harmed countless people they had no real knowledge of. And they have to help all those folks, and more, maybe, because, again, the karma is tenfold, maybe 50, huge amounts of changes have to be enacted for the benefit of others, at the sacrifice of the person who created the problem, the match. So here we have, so we got the first two parts of that, and you have to be very spiritual, and then you have to be balanced about it. And finally, you've got to take action. The actions, you can't just sit in a closet and meditate and reverse your karma. It's not possible. Because the third part of God's mind, which is interaction, is required, because all karma is an effect of energy and effect of interactions in itself, and they're all, what you created was a whole bunch of negative interactions, and now you've got to go into the world, go forth into the world, and directly involve yourself in reversing the negative interactions that are all around you that are commensurate with the interactions you caused. They may not be identical, but they don't need to be identical. They just need to be at the right motive and have the right, we'll call it, relationship, even though they're not identical in action, because action cannot be identical. It changes with time. So it's a different time, and therefore you're going to see a different kind of action, but it's going to be commensurate with the motive and with the timed forward or movement forward from the first actions that you took, or we took, or anybody takes, to create the karma. Wow, this is complicated. And it requires, therefore, great levels of sacrifice, great levels of consciousness, and finally, great levels of activity that are intelligent. You can't just willy-nilly do any old activity, including working 18 hours a day, doing silly activities that don't get at the nature of the negative karma. Your actions, our actions, my actions, have to be intelligent. Intelligent interactions change directly. You can see the changes in the negative karma for all these other folks. Less forces, more ability for them to create light, and light itself is increased. So it isn't some magical, like, I don't know really what I can do and how am I going to figure it out anyway kind of thing. It's the exact opposite. That there's so much prescribed, you have to really work at being creative to achieve it, but it can be done. Wow. All right, so hopefully we've got a pretty good understanding now of this karma question. It's a lot more complicated than just doing something that creates some forces in your life and then trying to join the action with the outcome so that you have a more enlightened result. It's not at all like that, is it? It's way more wide because of wrong motive, because it is against God, not just following all the virtue in God's thought. It's against God, and that's where negative karma has its great effect. How do we do this for ourselves? It requires fortitude, the resolve that we're going to live a great life to honor, to benefit, and to create more of God in all other life. This is our goal. If that's your goal, you're on the right track. That's the good part. As soon as you move in that direction, there's a benefit. The benefit is that the forces in your life will reduce. It doesn't get rid of the negative karma until you complete the whole thing that I said. But the forces become better. A lot of people start sitting on their laurels at that point and say, well, I did pretty good, so my laurels are good. Yeah, but the problem is that you haven't completed it. So then somewhere down the line, even though you do good things and it looks to all the outside folks like you're really living a great life, you didn't reverse the negative karma, and boom, suddenly in the middle of nowhere comes the great disaster that makes you suffer immensely, and then other people outside of understanding, and maybe the person who's having it happen, doesn't get it. They just don't get it, and they say, oh, what a bad thing happened to me, I feel so good. And then there's the possibility that the karma happened in a prior life, and you didn't have any memory of it because it was so negative. There was no memory could only be founded on virtue. It only remains because of virtue. It's gone. Then how do you figure it out? Well, karma has a calling card. The calling card is that it's breathlessly negative. It has a huge impact, and it's consistent and keeps going on and on and on until we change. So it isn't just like, oh, gee, I fell off the bicycle, or gee, I slipped and didn't do too well going up and down the stairs. No, it's not that. It's like every day it's something new. Now, there may be some repetition, there may be some connection, because karma doesn't want you, God doesn't want you to be ignorant. It wants you to understand, but if you can't increase your consciousness, it can only increase some level of knowledge. Well, increasing knowledge for some people does help. Gee, I don't know. I've had 50 different incidences in the last 3 months that were negative karma, and they all kind of fell into these general areas. I wonder if there's something I did maybe in this lifetime or a prior lifetime that caused all this. Well, of course, you don't have to wonder. You would figure that that's true. Then you look for ways in those areas of your life to be sacrificial, higher in consciousness and more loving, and intelligent interactions. And here's an important point. The discipline required in this requires that it be consistent and not that, oh, well, I'll do it for today, but tomorrow I'll take off, and maybe next week I'll forget about it altogether. You do that, and you're twisting the whole thing around, and guess what you got again? It's right back to the negative increase in karma and an increase in the consequential issue of bad motive. Well, how could it be bad motive if you start off being good? Well, because motive is not like I did good yesterday, therefore I can do bad today. Motive is I did good yesterday, therefore I'll do better today and even better tomorrow. If you're not doing that, you don't have good motive. No matter what you want to believe it yourself, otherwise. Well, that's not fair. Sure it's fair. Who in the heck ever said that because you're good today, you could be lousy tomorrow? Where did that come from? Except the dark side. Think about it. The preeminent condition known as personality disorder, both in psychology and spiritual, they don't always match, but this time they do, comes from that attitude. And coupled with trying to get something for nothing. Because that's what you're trying to do. I'll give you a little if I can get more in return tomorrow and the next day. It's still the something-for-nothing game. Okay. So I just want to make sure everybody gets that, because too many people work under that crazy idea. Well, that was good for a while. It's sort of the album, you know, problem. Hurry Christmas, hurry fast, hurry Christmas, I can't last. You know? I can only be good for a while. So you don't want to go down that road because the karma actually increases disproportionate to the time and behavior that you're doing. So you can actually up the ante on yourself and make your life much more miserable. Not a good idea. And before the break, that was kind of my humor there. Excuse me if it sounded too jolly. There is a kind of humorous side to it, watching people do this stuff. It's so ridiculous, and they don't get it. All right. Back to reversing the karma. Let's talk about the good stuff. All right. So, yes, you have to be consistent in your choice to change into having goodness, virtue, light as your daily outcome. And it needs to interact with others in ways that resolves what harm you perceive you caused, even if it's from a prior life where you don't have direct memory. You can figure it out, believe me. Also, there are clues in your present life. The areas where you see yourself consistently failing to be responsible are good places to start for where your karma is really initiating from. Even if you can't remember the exact incidences that started the whole thing, you can see the echoes as they reverberate throughout your life. Every time you're grossly irresponsible, or even partially irresponsible, either one, but grossly is worse, where you know better, and you can do better, but you choose not to. Oh, it's a little too hard. I would be, a little uncomfortable. Oh, gee, I didn't get to do these three things I would like to do. Those are the signs. And the more you ignore them, the worse it gets. Especially when you let others know and yourself that you're going to go and change all your karma because you know it's wrong. And then you do that kind of crazy behavior, you're going to get kicked in the butt hard. It won't be immediate. There'll be more forces in your life immediately, but all the negative karma keeps getting ratcheted up. And then you call up me, Niall. You say, hey, I have so much bad things happening to me. How come? Well, how many things have you been irresponsible with lately? How many things have you had wrong motive when you wanted to say you changed? How many things have you interacted poorly? Why have you done this? You know, by the time you're done with the litany, I guess that's why I have bad karma. Here is the answers. Here are the answers. Be genuine. Admit to your failings. Be grateful. The more you find out that's wrong with you, that you actually act on to change. Don't be one of the folks who says, oh, gee, I'm so thankful. I now know all the things I did wrong, but let me do some more today, and then I'll worry even tomorrow about all the things I did wrong. No. Admission without completion of light is bad motive. It's another dodge. It's in that personality development, personality disordered issues. It's another dodge. It's another way of just circumventing the whole issue. It's the BS of spiritual, quote-unquote, beingness. Why being spiritual, even if you care less about all the harm you've done? What about the folks who really feel guilty? I love this one. What if you use guilt? Guilt is my way of life. I feel guilty about all the things I didn't do right. You know what you get? Another big kick in the butt. Only this one could be bigger than the last one. Why would guilt get such a terrible result in terms of negative karma? After all, You feel the pain of others. You feel terrible of what you've done. You regret it so bad, you go and say 1,000 rosaries, and I'm sorry, and you go and you do prostrate yourself on the floor, and you maybe you whip yourself. Isn't that good enough? Self-focus. That's what it's self-focus. Guilt can become the way a person makes no sacrifice. Guilt can become the way a person chooses to never love anyone. Guilt can become the excuse of not taking any actions that really resolve the effects of your negative karma, things you've done to harm other life. Guilt is the excuse, not the answer. Now, wait. Doesn't churches, like the, we'll take the Catholic Church, don't they tell you guilt is a good thing because if you're guilty, you'll come in and you'll pray and you'll confess and all this other stuff. Talk is cheap. It's generally cheap. It's dirty. If you only say the things that show that you recognize that you've done bad, but you don't do anything to change the bad that you've done, you are more culpable. You're more responsible. You've increased your karma. Is it any wonder that so many people say that karma can't be true? Because there's so many quote-unquote good people that have so many bad things that happen to them. You don't really know those good people, do you? As a matter of fact, they may spend most of their life convincing others that they are a good person because they're no good. And to hide it, they do or say whatever it takes. You see, this is the problem. We need to be genuine. We need to be humble. We need to be honest. And most of all, we need to serve those that we have had anything to do with in harmony. As best as we can. As much as we can. Is it possible to make some effort with some benefit and still screw this up? Maybe. Let me go into that for a few minutes. Some people do actually go through point by point of what I've said, especially if they've talked to me, they try. And they do a little bit of each. Yep, they do some sacrifice. They do some consciousness-raising things by understanding the effects of all their terrible stuff they do. I know this. And they take some actions. Maybe not very much, but they do some things. They give it this way, they do that. And they kind of even balance them together. So what does that do? It relieves the time issues on the karma to some extent, if you balance them all. So unlike the statement I said earlier, that if you really have bad motive, you accelerate the karma, so it's going to make it worse for you, you actually may decrease the time, or I should say increase the time before the negative karma hits you, but also the negative karma continues to grow because you really haven't resolved it, have you? So more time just means more growth, but it may not hit you as quickly. So those folks who fall into that category have a kind of unusual position, a little bit of each. In the long run, though, I think most people would agree that it's not a very wise thing because you're eventually going to be hit with some huge karma that you wouldn't have had if you hadn't gone down that, again, disingenuous position, because it's not genuine to only do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and a little bit of something else, and even make them balance so that you look better, but you haven't really dealt with the real karma. Because that would take a lot. A huge amount of sacrifice, a huge amount of consciousness, an even huge amount of intelligent action. That's usually the hardest one, right? And intelligent activity involves money, which is compressed time and energy. So if you want to get rid of a lot of your karma, if you spend your money in exactly the right ways to serve the people that you've hurt in the past, you actually can resolve a lot of karma. Now, people say, well, you can't just throw money at it. Well, you can if you throw it in the right direction and in the right ways. Now, do people usually do that? No. They'll give it to their kids. They're going to make a difference. Or they'll give it to, let's give it to a charity. That's a good place. Really? All right. Are you starting to get how this whole thing is done? And it is there's a lot of practical things that come out of what I'm explaining, if you think about it, and if you re-listen to tonight's show. I know I'm going too fast, but I want to get a lot in a short time. I figure that you have the luxury of re-listening to the show as many times, whenever you would like, so that you could say, well, I know there was that show on karma, and they look it up, oh, yeah, here is reversing negative karma. And you can go right to it, and you can say, well, where is that part that deals with this? And you can skip ahead, and you can go right to it. So you have that as an option, which is the benefits of what I'm doing here, right? I mean, this is the reason I'm doing it. I'm not just doing it for everybody that's online right now or listening on the phone or whatever. I'm doing it for posterity. I'm hoping that a lot of people can use this at some other time besides now. A few of these shows may be made into e-books. Well, that's good, because then people can read. And some people don't do well just listening. They need to read. Now, why is that? I'll just as an aside mention it, because it is important. It fits into our understanding of how people function. When you listen, you're not using as much inner vision. Inner vision is the ability to take the side of you that has right motive and connect it to the concepts. Listening is, most people don't have a good way of doing that. When you read, you create an inner vision more often than listening. The creation of inner vision connects to the issues in your own, we'll say, motives, your own life, and you have a better opportunity. What if you listen to the show, which, by the way, gives you a better sense of knowledge and a better, we'll say, interest in wanting to gain understanding. So it may motivate you to want to gain understanding. And then you go ahead and read, and then that can give you better understanding and the visions of what you want to change in yourself more. And so you can connect it to, and part of it is that speech is continuous, and reading is based upon the effect of the mind and the reader in the reader and how fast they choose to integrate with the reading. They can slow down, they can speed up, do other things. And so all of that together makes the reading part probably more effective, but put together, it may give a person a really good opportunity to boost their level of consciousness. So, good reason to have an ebook with a auditory show. Now, some people say, well, what about watching you? I've had cameras in the studio before, and we're still looking into that. But it isn't so much watching me. It still would be better to hear the show and read, because that you get the inner vision. Watching me, you might see a few expressions. It might make something clearer, but for the most part, it's not as good as reading. What about pictures? People say, well, what about making a moving picture or have still pictures? Pictures can help because they help the creative imagination part. And they bring together some of the mental concepts with some element of creative imagination. And for some people, that can be very helpful. And it does benefit. It is not wholly a single, win. experience in front of me. Some people don't benefit that much from pictures, and sometimes they're even confused and or, let's say, not helped by pictures. So it is an interesting point. Moving pictures tend to present a specific kind of imagination. Interestingly, still pictures allows the creative imagination of each individual to fill in more of the blanks. So there's advantages to both and disadvantages. And that's just to let you know that. And yes, we're going to probably produce a few ebooks and see how that goes for folks. I think, based upon what I'm saying, we should see some improvement. So, actually, if we're talking about changes in reversing negative karma, then probably reading what I'm saying in tonight's show may have a better effect on our listeners than just listening to the show, because you get this inner side more able to see the harm that some behaviors in the past that you either know about or can conclude you did from your present circumstances gives you a better clue as to what's going on. Also, if you can observe yourself today in its existence, you can get a lot of understanding about what you were like in prior lifetimes. You're not the same personality, yet there are similarities in the karma. And that allows there to, so if you can see to your reactions to and your interactions with present-day karma, you can apply some of it to at least the last few lifetimes you've had. The further you go back, the less relevant it might be, but certainly the last three lifetimes would have something to do with it, and the last one would be the most relevant, most likely to most people. Interesting idea. All right. What else can someone elect to do if they're facing a bunch of negative karma in their life? Well, the main factor is that you look at the negative karma as a consequence of bad motive and irresponsibility, not as some way of, gee, I'll just do these 10 things so I can be better at overcoming these problems I have. That's probably not a good way to look at it. Now, a lot of people say, well, but you give me advice. You tell me if I do this or that, it might solve some of my problems. I give people advice so that they can serve. And I always connect to some level of service. And they usually ignore the level of service and only listen to, well, take these pills or try changing this herb or moving in this direction or that direction. But they don't hear the rest, and they ignore it. So the real problem here isn't that you can't, oh, gee, I have this problem, should I just ignore the problem? No. The problem exists as a real problem, but it is coming from bad motive, irresponsibility. It's coming from darkness. Change the light, and you change not only the immediacy of that particular problem, but you change your ability to understand many other problems, and you solve what is going on for the harm you've caused in this life and not prior lives for so many others. That should bring joy into your life. That should allow you to gain much more meaning in your life and forget about just saying, well, gee, I'm going to be more well. No, it's really not the bottom line. Bottom line is, how well is everybody else going to be? How much have you served others so they can become servers themselves? How much are you helping everybody else to create more, co-create more of God? That is the real issue, isn't it? And you can make a difference about that, truly. There's no question about it. So when we think about these things, you know, I tell you, most people don't get the true understanding of what they're doing, so they get mixed up and they cause as much or more harm to themselves through initially pursuing we'll call it a life of someone who is hoping to become a spiritually disciplined person, but they aren't really doing it. They're not. They're actually going the opposite way. They're an aspirant to becoming. They aspire, but they don't do what needs to be done. There's 100 aspirants for every person who wants to sincerely serve others. And that's a bad number. Huge number of aspirants in the world. They may be an aspirant for a day, an hour, a week, a month, a year. Well, a year is pretty long. Maybe up to a half a year. But the majority of them go away. They don't stick around. They don't change. It's true that people who want to do good and who are disciplined to do so may have been aspirants, but you can't reverse that and say that most aspirants eventually end up being spiritually disciplined. That's quite the opposite. Very few. Hopefully you'll become one, because if you do, you can overcome your negative karma. And it's a big deal. Let's talk about some of the things that give people the benefits of overcoming negative karma. The first is that every bit of the negative karma that is overcome becomes good karma. Good karma. What's good karma? Good karma naturally reduces the forces in your life for the immediate, but most importantly, it allows you the opportunity to significantly increase your spiritual service and the spiritual service of others that want to co-serve with you. It allows you a greater latitude in doing this. That's what good karma is. Good karma is not winning the lottery. It's not getting a new car. It's not asking you if you want something or to give you something. It's not any of those things. Good karma is increasing your ability to serve, increasing your ability to create, increasing your ability to be conscious and help others through wise giving so that they can do the same. It gives you the ability to increase activity by intelligent interactions that require less time and energy, actually less money, and gives you a sense of well-being, improves health, provides for all the needs to keep your body and your spiritual being alive. It gives you every, we'll say, benefit, and it reduces negative karma. That's good karma. And that comes from right motive, right consciousness, right action, and the willingness to sacrifice anything to do those things. Does this start making, I hope this is gelling. It's like, wow, I'm trying to make this like, you know, paint by numbers. Okay? First you fill in this, then you do that. So that we have some kind of way to proceed, other than floundering in the misery of guilt and poor or bad motives, wrong actions, waste of huge amounts of resources by giving, literally, our resources for the wrong thing. And then the inability to see evil. The scary thing about that is that this whole planet is tenuously on the edge of failing because so few people can see and understand evil. The majority do not. And this is a grave concern. Now, I'm not just talking about the United States or anything like that. I'm talking about the whole world. And we've got some real big issues. Every time the world is faced with an issue, I don't care if it's coming from President Obama or from some absurd, obtuse place, every time the world is faced with this, we'll call them malevolent kinds of actions or thoughts, behaviors. The results are a test. They're a test first of, can you see it? Do you get it? Those who don't get it become less likely to get it next time and fall into the trap of accumulating negative karma because they become victimized by evil so often that they can easily be swallowed into the evil camp. Even if they don't go down that road, they become ineffective as a creative being of light over time. Even the most virtuous people, if they have wrong motive and cannot reverse their negative karma by much, eventually will succumb to darkness and evil. And this is what evil is dependent upon. It's not dependent upon just those that it has a grasp over. It's possessing those devils. It's those are few in number. It's getting it from the huge number of people, huge, that are on this other side. They may slightly believe in God, or they may not believe in God at all, but they don't have enough going for them. They can see and understand religion. And they are the ones that are going to tip the balance on the planet. That's where the greatest danger is presently lying. And some of this is all wrapped up in tonight's show about gaining a responsibility for all of the interactions, all of the consciousness, all of the sacrifices and creations each of us is making. It's all interconnected. It all needs to be addressed as soon as possible. And we have limited time. A couple of generations, that's how far we are away from the whole world failing. Now, what is a failed world? Failed world is where about one out of four or so people have or are evil as a dominant part of their life. One out of four. What's it right now? Pretty low. It's about maybe one out of a few hundred. Now, why is it so low and we have this problem and it can go to one out of four in a generation or two? Because evil's methods are so seductive and effective, especially in today's world. It's easier to convince people that God doesn't exist when they live their life based upon superficial knowledge instead of consciousness. Those folks who are in the majority in some parts of the world are the easiest to get to become, we'll call it, the bad motive but looking right kind of folks. And they have the upper hand right now in a large sections of the United States and all the rest of the world. This has been coming for some time, in the last three or four generations particularly. Each time that a new generation comes in, it falls into the majority of this particular part of the equation, the world is moving in a further darker way. And it's been doing that in a very, we'll call it, logical progression, for well over 100 years, we have some serious problems. So, and that's five generations. Think about it. So, there is some, we'll say, momentum that is leading to bad motive. Bad motive leads to falsehoods, propaganda eventually, and to a life so ungodly that it can sustain itself only for a very limited period. If the world were to, within the, let's say, the next two generations, that's 40 years, become predominantly, we'll say, populated by people who have bad motives, people whose motive is to get something for nothing, to live off of others, to live off of the government, which is really a way of living off others, to not be concerned about karma and God because they don't believe God exists and karma is just for suckers. That then, at that point, what is going to take place is there will be almost a force against all goodness to the level that goodness only survives in the hearts of those who can even physically survive. And it becomes a non-functional, a non-operational part of society. And the whole civilization we live in becomes dark. There are just no parts. There's no place to go. There's no parts to interact with. There's all the things I'm saying to do to reverse negative karma become almost impossible. That's a real serious dilemma. There may still be some spiritually disciplined people, but they will not be able to live very long. And their lives will be short and relatively ineffective against this virtually overwhelming, tremendous level, numbers, and besides just numbers, quality, the negative quality, the motives of people, that it will make it virtually impossible for those people to incarnate in the following generations. Because they can't incarnate, they may leave this world, or they may just stay out, they don't incarnate. The soul can still exist for a very long time in the middle world. But your proportions of evil people start rising. There's about 60 billion souls, about right now a little over 7 billion people. That means that a little over 10% of the souls are incarnated right now. Well, if you knock out 40% of them because they're too good to incarnate for a few generations, what does that leave you? Well, it leaves you with mostly the darker potential souls to incarnate, with some evil ones that don't have any souls at all. Well, that's a real problem. The darker souls aren't themselves dark souls. They have the inability to create enlightened incarnates because of the karma they have to face in making, creating a new person. That karma is, they can't get around it. And it's so dark that the person's senses are no good. It's a spiral downward. So they don't see God anymore. They don't have the motivation. They don't. And each generation, in a couple of generations, gets extremely dark, almost like overnight. So the negative karma becomes the karma of nations and the world in a mass way, which is starting to happen right now, all over the place. And it's being expressed that way in the terms of certain leaders. The President of the United States expresses it that way. Social justice. What is that? Well, that's that everybody's motive is my motive, and my motive is that no people are more conscious than I am, or the rest of my group, the progressives and the socialists and the communists are. We're all going to be the model for you, and you're going to follow. Well, that's going to end the world as we understand. So you end up with the souls standing out that are the most capable, because they can't even create anything in such a toxic environment. A few of them will try. Most of them will find it impossible. and the world can end in an eye blink by it, by spiritual plane. I say a couple generations you can get locked into where you reach the 1 out of 4, another generation or two and the world's done. That's like 80 years. That's the turn of the next century. And we could end the world. That's a very fast outcome. Many people would argue it would be at least twice, 3 times that long, but so what? Okay, I'll be off by 200 years. I mean, at the end of the world, it's going to be then, whatever. The point is, you know, this is there's a spiritual way of understanding this. I'm trying to explain it in terms of karma and to see how the karma stays with us through lifetime after lifetime, and eventually we may not be able to get ourselves out of it, and not only that, we may not be able to get anybody else out of it, and the whole world may not be solvable. These are serious consequences. Each person that really wants to reverse their negative karma needs to include these considerations in their motives. Like, I don't want to destroy the world. I want to do something, and if I do it now, I might make a change. If I do it in the next lifetime, it might be too late because things are getting so bad so fast, if you can see evil. And if you can't, you probably already turned off the show, right? Why is that guy talking about evil, evil, evil? You see, that's the problem. Too many people have already turned off. Not just the show, but anything dealing with these issues. Oh, I don't believe there's anything like souls. So souls aren't going to stay out because they're not part of it. People are just born like, you know, they're born, they're hatched. And they die, they die. That's it. Okay. Those folks, we're not going to be able to deal with anyway. While we still have a chance, and we don't have much, we've got a short time. Let's try to make the best of it by including in your motives, include this in the, your motive, that you want this world to succeed. You want it to be the kind of place that your dreams are like. You want it to be the kind of place that has within it those people who are willing to do all the things that I said you need to do to reverse your karma. You're not going to get majority. Don't think that. What do you need? Well, you need maybe the reverse of what I said. About a quarter of the people. Instead of a quarter of people being evil, you need a quarter of the people to be the light. That's still a pretty big number. While there's only one out of hundreds that are evil, that's not a too great a number. Believe me, it's a small, you know, we still got some chance. There are very few people at this time who are really living their life in a godly way. Very few. Is it better than the number of people who are evil? Probably. I think we still got the advantage there. But the evil ones have the inertia on their side, and it's working for them. Sometimes evil doesn't have to do much of anything. It's just a numerical thing, and it just has to wait for the end. That's the kind of situation we're really facing right now. Good has to do something. Lots of times in the past, evil has had to take proactive measures to be effective. We have reached a turning point where that's not necessarily true in most parts of the world. That's frightening. Now, some people will say, well, it isn't as bad as you're saying. Well, have you gone to Venezuela lately? You know, I mean, I think the point is that we have blinders on to what's going on around us. Imagine what it must be like to live in North Korea. Well, China's bad enough. I mean, you got to look at these things from the standpoint of this is a world in which a significant number of people, trillions of people, I mean billions, trillions not there yet, billions of people who are basically incapable of overcoming the system that has them by the throat. And it only took a couple generations for that system to do that to them. The same model can be applied to the whole world from this point forward. I hope this is making some sense. If you think about it, if you have some understanding of world events, history, the various forms of governance, and the way that the world has moved in a dark direction. The premise of evil is to lure people into darkness by giving them something for nothing, or at least the promise of it. Why is that so enticing? Because it replaces love with the emotional sensation of being loved by darkness. Real love is being loved with and for and by God. But evil replaces that feeling with, oh, gee, you're getting something for nothing. Elect me, elect these people, do this, and they'll give you something for nothing. And isn't that wonderful? And it makes you feel good because you're getting something for nothing. It feels like love. Go pick up your welfare checks. Go get this and that for free. It feels like love. Until the only thing it costs you is your soul. Until your creativity, which is part of the light in you, goes down and eventually vanishes. Until your ability to understand what's happening to you and to others diminishes to the point where you don't understand. And finally, until you choose to live a life and interact with others in ways that get you more things, get you more power, get you more control, get you more everything you want, and you don't care about how much harm you're doing to anybody else. And even if you do care about the harm, you don't do anything to change it. So those are the ways that people are being sucked in. This is the medium that the dark side uses, and it is being very successful. Is it being active in its succession? Some ways, yes. But in other ways, it doesn't have to do as much as it did in the past because it takes so little to get so far with the darkness of today. Propaganda is an excellent example. 100 years ago, propaganda was very difficult to achieve. The medium that was most effective was slow and clumsy. Newspapers and news media of that sort. It had little effect because propaganda requires constant, over and over again, reiteration of its ideas so that you start to believe the most nonsensical beliefs. The advent of radio, television, movies, any way of reaching large numbers of people in a short time changed them. The technology that evil needed came about in the 20th century. Oh, there was a telegraph in the very beginnings of radio, slightly before that, but it really wasn't. There wasn't real broadcast radio, and there wasn't. The telegraph was not an effective tool. Telephones were almost non-existent except in small areas. So if you look at all of that, and most countries had none of that, that didn't do much of anything. And telegraphs only worked from one party to another, and then they had to talk about it. It wasn't mass. There was a huge change from the propaganda side. And it made it more and more difficult for people to reverse their karma. Because in order to do so, you've got to have some understanding of God and truth, some ability to get around that which you hear as false, And that comes from there being quiet and inner vision. If you're flooded, your senses are flooded with lies that are created by cunning, dark people, the results could be disastrous. How disastrous? Well, in huge ways, very quickly, we saw whole nations turned around in one or two generations. Does that make sense to you? I hope it does. You see, today it's more likely to happen in a shorter time than at any time before today, because the media has improved to so much more. We now have cell phones. You get information from your cell phones. We have computers that are virtually trailing everything we do, from buying something to selling something to movement about. And the results are that all this information is used to propagandize whatever those who are seeking to control us. I don't care if they're trying to control us to sell us something or trying to control us to sell us on their philosophies, their power, their control over us. It's all the same thing to me. They're trying to subvert the motives of people to become much more selfish. When someone wants to sell you something that is coming from a motives or methods, of propaganda, what they're really doing is they're trying to increase your negative karma. But you don't realize. You may participate in it because, well, gee, I didn't even know I wanted to buy that, but since you mentioned it, sure, that sounds like a good idea. Where do I get one? Oh, it's right here on the page. I can shop here and get it. Of course, those folks paid the propagandists to bring you to them, to divert you from using your resources to become more enlightened and to stop you from reversing your negative karma. But you don't get it. We don't get it. We are sheep. In order to achieve the goals that we're seeking, you've got to see things as they really are. You got to turn to the cards that are screaming from the heart queen saying, cut off their heads. And they're coming after you, and you've got to say, I'm not afraid of you. We're just a bunch of playing cards. What I am concerned about is what's inside me. And you're just trying to get me to not see what's inside me. You're not getting me to take responsibility for the bad motives I've had, for all the terrible things I've done. And you're trying to convince me to do what you want me to do because I want to feel loved in some way so I can get something for nothing that helps me to feel that. And that the more I get of that, the less I am responsible in every other way in my life. That's the seduction. That's happening all around us all the time at an increasing rate daily. It's like a huge monster. So multi-headed you can't even imagine, and it's everywhere to be found. Who are impervious to it? Those that have the motive to reverse their karma now, and who seek to do so by sacrificial issues, creation of new ways to become part of God, and help others to do that, and have the understanding of all the ways they have caused problems, and all the ways others are causing problems, and part of the karma eventually becomes to help others to overcome their negative karma, not just to overcome our own. One is called individual, the other eventually becomes national, and then international. And it starts off on a group basis of everybody you know and you like. You change your perspective. It's anti-propaganda. It's the opposite of everything I described about propaganda. The opposite. Can you do it? Sure. Each of us has the ability to do this. Each. Everybody has that ability. Can we do it? Yes. Will we do it? I'll pray. We need about 1 out of 4 people doing it to stop this planet from succumbing to some of the disastrous effects. 1 out of 4. That's a huge number from where we are right now. We need lots of people, therefore, to listen to shows like this. We need not everybody. Not 1 out of 4 people are ever going to listen to the show. I guarantee that. But we need people to start doing some of the things that people who do listen to the show do. It doesn't mean that you live your life completely forgetful of your own existence. It means you recognize that your existence is part of everybody else's life, which is to co-create with God in its life, to become part of the solution, and to stifle, smother the problem. Each good act with right motive can produce 10 more. Just like negative karma can produce 10 times or greater terrible forces and terrible destructions of meaning and all the virtues, good karma can do the opposite, equally or greater sorrow. Now, why would it be equal many people could buy? You could say, okay, I can see where it's sort of like a mirror. You know. But why would it be greater? Why would someone creating goodness, virtue, light, God, co-creating with God, why would that be more potent, more effective than the dark side? Because the dice are loaded. I already explained this at the beginning of the show. Every time someone creates darkness, they may destroy our world if possible. But every time they create darkness, they reduce their ability to be conscious by at least a small amount. That reduction in consciousness eventually leads to the ultimate failures that they're going to have. It also reduces their effectiveness. So evil has to increase its numbers disproportionately to the amount that good has to increase. And over time, now I'm talking about many generations. We were talking about just a couple, but let's say dozens of generations, this thing works out. And eventually, dozens of generations, that's 20 years of generation, so hundreds of years, eventually evil fails. Even if good doesn't keep up, evil will. Now, that seems like a good thing, but evil failing doesn't mean the world's more enlightened. Remember the Dark Ages for the Western civilization? Where did that come from? Well, most people attribute it to the complete destruction of the Roman Empire, not known for its virtues. But nonetheless, we could say that the darkness in Rome certainly was destroyed. Wasn't it? I mean, there wasn't much left of Rome afterwards. What came about, though, was a period in which there was so little left of human civilization that things had to be rediscovered over many hundreds of years. There was a need for a reversal of the brutalities in the destructions, and there was a need for people to basically find some semblance of security in an age of grand torture, destruction. As bad as Rome was, many people claim the Dark Ages after about 525 AD became a nightmare in some places. That's somewhat true. So you can't assume that just getting rid of darkness is a solution to a problem. The real solution is increasing light. As you increase the light, the darkness will pass away. If you destroy the darkness in the world, you may just destroy the world. And this go-round may be where we're at that point. No guarantees, but it's more likely now than ever before. Well, I shouldn't say it, but there was a time during the end of the Atlantean period that could be contentiously argued. But the point is that period had very little to do with our problems of today. The darkness from that period were astral. The darkness from our period are mental. Yeah. All right. So in our issues, in what we're dealing with now, to convert the negative karma is not, as we would expect, to just get rid of evil. Remember I said, you can't just recognize evil, although that's a good place to start. You've got to create good and overcome all the evil effects in so many different ways on so many people. You can't just say, well, Hugo Chavez is dead, so bad guy's gone, everything's going to be great. Oh, come on. Everything he created and those that served and helped with him, including our own United States country, all of this, the money the United States paid for all the oil that came from Venezuela, that money was used to subvert the world. And at an increasing rate as the United States didn't develop their own oil reserves. And of course, the present administration says, well, the solution to it is we just shouldn't use oil at all, that's it. Like that's really going to happen. It's not. But what really, really could have been would have been needed two generations ago, right? We could have made some changes. We chose not to. And a lot of people that look at this problem don't gain the real insight into the issues of the bound. Remember, money is compressed time and energy. If we had 10 times the wealth, we could destroy all the evil in the world. 10 times the wealth, we could destroy it. A good chance of it. I'm not saying we would, but we could. That's a huge thing. 10 times. Well, what could we have made 10 times the wealth? Oh, yeah, we squandered far more than that. By huge errors. Okay, so what's going on in Venezuela? Well, Venezuela has become dark. Way over half the people want something for nothing. And when you think about it, the next person to come to power there is going to be not much different from Hugo Chavez. Why not? Because the system is already there for people getting something for nothing, and worse than that, evil has had its way. Thousands of people were murdered. Maybe tens of thousands. And you can't just take a blind eye to that. That negative karma is on a national scale, and it has individual consequences for the people involved in it. It has significant things that need to be changed. And we, in an international way, we being the United States and those maybe other countries that maybe people in them are listening to them right now, have a lot of responsibility for it. All this stuff that's happening, obviously, can go right back to the folks who could have stopped it, prevented it, and made it go away. Just incredible. Just incredible. It's a shocker. So the world karma is a real concern here because there's a tremendous amount of that. Besides the individual karma of all the folks who individually participated in these different interactions. All right, so where does this really lead us? If you're looking to reverse your karma, on, we'll say, a soul level. The soul sees the karma of a person by what is missing in itself. It doesn't have direct memories of the past that are negative. It only remembers enlightened things. Even as we live now, we can only remember what our soul could remember, which is enlightened. And only if they were connected 60% of the time by other enlightened things will we ever remember them as a person. So it's a very difficult problem, but we can get around it. The first is to believe you have a soul, to try to communicate with your soul about the negative karma that you have. Let me give you some examples. Let's say that I recognize that all kinds of negative things are happening in my life. And those negative things are not from, we'll say, intricate spiritual services that I've been doing. They're from personal issues, personal things I've done, and things that I may have done in prior lifetimes. As soon as I gain that understanding, I can try to join with my soul to alter the negative karma my soul chose for me to have in this lifetime. It chose out of a huge basket of negative karma that only a certain amount of that basket will become what we call my personality. My personality is my negative karma. Let me say that again. My personality, your personality, all of our personalities are our negative karma. If we could learn and understand everything about our personality, which is subconscious for itself, we would know everything about our negative karma. So the revelation of our personality by making it part of our soul, connecting it to our soul, and by bringing it, therefore, into our higher self in terms of awareness, gives us a tremendous advantage in reversing our negative karma, because it's right there in front of us. All the negative karma that we're living through now has to be part of our personality. You didn't know that. Okay, that's why you're listening to this show, right? So that you can find that out. Okay, so this is an interesting point, right? You can, therefore, by becoming both aware and conscious of your personality, which means that you will no longer have a subconscious. You would only have a fully conscious being. And that's the objective of spiritual discipleship. That is what spiritual discipleship is. Okay? So we could say this is synonymous with that, and it's also synonymous with becoming your soul while you're here in the physical world. Does that mean you will know all of your negative karma from every life? No. Only the negative karma your personality chose to make your personality. It also doesn't mean you can't create a new, different kind of negative karma. But mostly, people only do that when they're affected by evil or something. Mostly. They certainly are going to be affected by being very dark. If you stay away from that, you're not going to create any new negative karma that you've never had before. But most importantly, you're going to mostly live out the karma that your personality is, as your soul created that personality. And since you created it, you can change it. But you can't change it unless you're aware of it, conscious of it, which means understanding of it, and then choose to take action about it. Those are the three things I've talked about so far in the show, right? And you can start seeing now that this is the big part of the plan that I'm suggesting. It's becoming more your soul because your soul has the answer. The soul knows exactly who your personality is, and it is the vehicle that you can reveal the personality to yourself, but it's actually a bigger self than the little self. It's yourself with a huge amount of your soul itself. Soul self and yourself together. And then no part of you will be subconscious. No part, if you do this in totality. Is it a big thing to do it? Oh, well, it's huge. It's the end of spiritual discipleship for a human being. It's the last two initiations, but mostly it deals with the middle to the end of the third and the fourth initiation. That's what it is about. It's becoming the soul to a large extent. You say, well, why aren't you a soul before that? Well, you are, and it's a much smaller percentage, maybe 25, 30% at most. But it's that you're not becoming this huge amount of soul until you reach those higher levels. The rest of it's baby steps. Can you jump ahead? Let's see, you say, well, I know I'm only a first-level initiate, so I'm doomed from ever discovering my full personality. Nope, that's not true. If that is the most you've ever achieved, in other words, you weren't like a third-level initiate, and now you're functioning like a first, that's a dysfunctional person, dysfunctional spiritual disciple. But let's say you're a spiritual disciple indeed, truly at the first-level initiation. Well, guess what? That's what your soul decided was the level of personality you needed to get you to the point where you could make the choice to become a spiritual being, a soul, yourself. And you don't have any more negative karma than that on your personal level than that in that lifetime. You can bet it. You can know it. And that's the level that you have to be responsible at. If you're fully responsible at that level, and you create virtue at that level, which is called nobility, then you will reverse your negative karma for that life. Guaranteed. Promise you. Now you could say, well, this is all news to me. I didn't know that you'd be doing it. Well, I know it is. And there's no book I know that explains it in the way I just did. Why not? How come the great ones, there are great ones, who have written amazing things, didn't explain it this way? Science. In order to understand this, you've got to understand the relationship of personality, self, and incarnation. You've got to understand all kinds of things about energy and the production of subconscious to conscious. You need to understand a lot of things that are not and were not part of spiritual teachings until very recently. They were too mystical to get to that level of understanding. And so the plain truth is that we just couldn't get there because even the level of teaching wasn't there. But it is now. And so we have a great way to deal with reversing negative karma. Okay, so let's get to the nuts and bolts then, because we don't have a lot more time, of how we're going to achieve this remarkable change. Nuts and bolts. First, spiritual discipline, there are lots of shows I've done on this, is required to some extent. The reason it is because it's the model for becoming your soul. And it simultaneously is the model for reversing selfish motivation into spiritual motivation and eventually into fully manifested sacrificial spiritual motivation at the soul level. The soul level is not the level of the soul itself, but only to the level it created your personality. You're only expected to reach that level. Can you exceed it? Yes. But if you work at the level of the soul, you will reverse the negative karma in your life regardless. Once you know you're working at the level of your soul, the level of your personality as it was created by your soul, because your negative karma stopped. And suddenly you say, hey, you know what? There's a few forces here and there in my life, but basically, things are not happening to really snap, and all the terrible things falling in on me. It stopped. Wow. If you're working in a spiritual group, you've got to have at least three members in that group functioning together to make it a what is known as an active or effective spiritual group. Then, for those people who are functioning in that group, their negative karma. And the group's negative karma is a mission stop. Evil can't have its way with you anymore, too. The door, the windows are not open to evil into that group. If you're working as a spiritual group, spiritual groups don't necessarily call themselves spiritual groups. They don't even know themselves to be that. A spiritual group is co-creating with God. And if it's doing with three members at the level that it's functioning at in terms of spiritual discipline, then it's doing its job. And it's reversed negative karma as long as it keeps doing that. Is that good? Oh, yeah. Especially if you're trying to do a lot of big things in the world and you're facing evil, because evil goes after anyone who's doing a lot of trying to do good. And if you have a lot of negative karma, you're just going to get clobbered. Big time. But that's how the system is devised. If you are not yet working in a spiritual group, you should be, by the way. And you're still somehow managing to be capable, which is going to be the highest level, because you can be somewhat capable in a spiritual way, you may be reversing some of your negative karma in the process. That means your personality is not fully fusing with your soul at the level that you're capable of, but it's doing some of it. And some of the negative karma can be reversed from that process. Now remember, the numbers of people doing this have to be relatively low based upon what I said, right? Yep. Yeah. That's what's wrong. We need more. Or evil's going to win this contest, so to speak. Now, can you go to like a spiritual shrink or something? You know? Tell me what my personality is and how it is. Even if you could, and I don't think you can for the following reason, but for a reason which I'll explain in a minute, even if you could, the problem is that knowledge does not serve to change you. You have to have understanding, and you need to have the will to change, the willing to sacrifice, and you need to actively and intelligently actively function. That's the problem. So even if you just go to the greatest guru of all time and say, oh, master, tell me what it is, usually the greatest gurus will just kick you out and say, go find for yourself, because then you will follow these other tenets that need to be done instead of being lulled into believing just because you heard it from me, from my lips, that suddenly you're going to change. It's just the opposite, because that could lead you to selfish motivations, which may be the reason you're here asking me the question in the first place. And so to help you get over that, maybe I'll kick you in the butt a few times. That's the reason those sort of scenarios take place, unfortunately, for people. They think, well, what a selfish son of a gun that guru guy was, because it threw me, or woman guy was, because it threw me out. Well, no, they threw you out because that's the best they could do for you. If you really want to understand more about it, get the book The Upside Down Circle. Yeah. All right, so look at the situation from the standpoint that this is something that mostly has to be done by your own self. You can talk to people like me or like others who have some understanding about it, but ultimately it requires great amounts more than listening to a radio show or reading something. It requires a huge amount of effort, of sacrifice, huge amounts of effort of spiritual discipline, a huge amount of effort of the willingness of humility. Why humility? Because humility is really the connection between you and your soul. When you're humble, you don't care that you look like a son of a gun. You don't care if you are the greatest imbecile of all time at that moment. All you care about is, how am I serving others? How is this helping all those that need me and need God? And you don't care if other people don't like you for it. You don't care if other people think you're a jerk. If you know that it's the way, and you see it, you understand it, and you function in it, and you sacrifice for it, and you're doing the right thing. Be aware that this is a treacherous path. Wrong motivation can do everything and turn everything south. You can have almost perfect, quote-unquote, spiritual etiquette. Wrong motive, you're dead in the water. And lots of people fall victim to that. It is, and sometimes it's called spiritual ambition, But it's really deeper than just being ambitious. It's about how people see you, how you see yourself, what you are seeking really to get from others rather than to give. It's truly about being engrossed in the personality rather than trying to get the personality to become part of the self. Personality is sly, in a sense, because it wants to maintain its own existence at the cost of anything and everything. It does this because during our childhood, in early, very early, our adolescent and early adult years, by our standards adult, we seek to survive and to learn how to control the world around ourselves so we can survive. It's really about survival. And without a personality, people would end up dying too often in early years before they could become effective as co-creators of God. So it's a necessary darkness that people have. It also grows from negative karma, from one lifetime to the next. So personalities are needed for both, to keep us alive, but also to use up some of the negative karma so that we can eventually reverse it, because the part of the personality that causes us to suffer, which is a large extent, what it actually is, we have to overcome and change what it is, that part of us is an enigma. We need it to be alive when we're young, yet it becomes a cross to bear until we reach the point where we can reject it as not something controls us anymore, but something that leads us to all the things that we need to change in ourselves to be of service to others. It's a wonderful roadmap, in a sense, but only as we see it for what it really is, and not for what it wants us to believe we are. Okay, so it's an amazing journey, and this journey in reversing negative karma, it's a journey of joining our personality to ourself and our lower self, to our soul, and our lower self to our higher self, all at the same time. This journey can be, in each lifetime, completed to the level that we are capable of for that lifetime. And if it's done while we're physically alive, huge amounts of good karma come from it. If it's done when we're astrally alive, it's a wash. And if it's only done while we're mentally alive, we have more negative karma to deal with in our next lifetime than the time before. Did you get that? Got the numbers? Why is that the case? Well, because of our senses and our ability to create in the hardest parts of the universe, which is the physical and the etheric parts of the universe where we are right now. Those parts require the most amount to be created in, the most amount of sacrifice, the most amount of consciousness in relative terms, and the highest level of interactions that are intelligent to prevent forces from developing, which are severe. Now, yeah, when we go to the astral world, our consciousness may actually slightly elevate, but at the same time, in relative terms, the amount of creation we can effectuate is dramatically less. And our intelligent interactions, while seemingly effective with others, because there's a whole other dimension that we can work with them on, have little to do with getting rid of evil. Evil becomes impervious to what we do in the astral world in terms of really getting rid of it, unless you work at the very highest levels. You work from what is known as the first astral subworld, you can actually still do something about evil. Otherwise, you're impotent. Terrible. And then finally, if you go on to the mental part of existence and you're trying to deal with your personality of what's left of it there isn't much to deal with. All that's left of your personality is all the lies that you told yourself and others and the ways that you initiated bad thoughts that contaminated the thoughts of so many other people. The interesting thing is that that didn't cause most of the negative consequences. It was the bad actions you did and the bad feelings you produced in others that produced the most harm.
the bad thoughts, they may have gotten over a bit long ago, but you still have to get over having caused them. And those afterthoughts of all the other people that were hurt in the meantime during that period of time. And it could have been 100 years ago. The issue here is that it is of little change to the negative karma that you caused overall, percentage-wise. That's the problem. When is the time to reverse the negative karma? How about now? How about right now? How about from this minute forward? That's a good time. Wait, and it's a bad time, especially after you die from the physical world. And it gets worse as you move into the monastic realm. You have very little chance to change the negative karma, if you haven't done so at all by that point. It's not a good outcome for that lifetime. Just so you understand, the meaning in life is also reduced by the amount that you do not deal with negative karma. All of us. This is the truth. Meaning in life goes down the tubes. So each of us leads a less and less meaningful life in all of the aspects of what meaning truly is when negative karma is left to fester and or worse grow. Meaning comes from the reversal of negative karma, not because we get something, but because we give anything. Meaning comes from giving in wise ways to others. Meaning comes from creation of new and greater parts of God. Meaning comes from the grand level of interaction between each of the elements of who and what we are and every other thing, including all life in the universe. Meaning is all of those connections compounded and grown by all the consciousness and then further and tremendously magnified by the creations that we are. Do all that and life becomes amazing. Life seems like an endless joy, regardless of how terrible it is on a moment-to-moment basis. It doesn't mean you don't suffer. It just means that besides the suffering, there's something even greater. Besides, those who don't create, those who don't do all the parts, they get meaning. Add to their negative karma over time. They do it in many different ways. I don't have time right now to go into all of them, and I wouldn't want to end the show on that note. But they do it in many different ways. So let's not go down that road. Let's listen to the solutions tonight. I don't want to go into every possible way to fail in this situation. But go into all of the grand ways of really achieving the maximum amount of meaning in existence. Now, I did mention, and I will reiterate, that you can move beyond what your soul thought was your level of capability. Karma, negative karma, comes with the personality. But there's something that we have to figure. Each personality did not work out all its negative karma, as I just explained about the different worlds, subworlds, and all everything else, that you end up with either a plus or a minus. Too often a minus. And so the results are we have negative karma from quite a ways back in our personalities. And as you complete or come close to completing the negative karma of the most recent personality, the one that you're looking at right now, you become aware, directly aware, of the karma from prior personality. Usually, literally, but not always, literally in this sense, but somewhat, going back chronologically. So your last life becomes the next one to pop up, but it isn't always that way. Sometimes there's connections to things that could be four or five lifetimes ago. But whatever it is, it's going to come up, and you're going to start dealing with karma from prior lives. if you reach near reversing the negative karma in the life that you're in. So you're following that. So these lies keep, more and more personalities are developed, more and more time. And so eventually you could go back to the very beginnings of all the negative karma that remains from every personality in your lifetime. So in theory, although I don't know that anybody has ever done this, someone can start this journey in the life they're in, and they could complete it in the life they're in. They would truly be an amazing being, because they would go from being mostly a personality to entirely a fully awakened and ascended soul. Yeah, that takes hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, I know. But the point is that the possibility is there, which means the level of meaning would be commensurate with the amount of negative karma that you reversed. That, think of the level of meaning being at a God level of meaning. You would experience some of what God experiences in its life during the same period. It would be just dramatically amazing, because all of your connections would be so vast. True, it'd be for a single planet, but it would be an amazing number of ways. Much would be revealed, and a true, true spiritual being would be created, self-created, in one lifetime. I don't know of anybody who's done that. I know that Buddha was described as having come somewhat closer to that kind of experience. And that's one of the reasons is in some parts of the world, just, you know, the people are just amazed by his accomplishments. But they aren't at the point in what I'm describing. They are a piece of it, a part of it, a small part, maybe. And it's still a tremendous life, that life that we are familiar with as Buddha. And so looking at this from the standpoint of potential, again, you can see how wonderful the universe is, that we have not only the ability to reverse our karma in the immediate sense, we could go back to the very beginning of our first life if there was still karma from that life. Now, every life could be undone, and while you're physically alive, what an amazing thing. Single-handedly, if one person, one, could do this, especially if three, could do this thing, the world would be saved. Now he's, oh, come on, three people saved the world? Yeah, because so much karma, when you add it all up, and in so many ways interconnected, would be reversed in such a short time. Evil would be fully exposed. People would start seeing all of this amazing meaning coming into existence, not just in the lives of the three people, but all the lives that they touch, which would be humongous numbers. Billions of people would be affected by three people. And certainly significant parts of those billions by each one. So an amazing part of the process is possible through this endless reversing, almost endless reversing, a negative karma that we are capable of doing. Is that real wisdom? It's an okay goal. It's all right to have that as your, like, I'm going to try this even if it's way out of reach. Why? Because no matter how much you fail, it's that important in the long, in the immediate sense, you will succeed better if you try. Trying is worth the cost of failure, for sure. And if it isn't, you have bad motive. So there you go. You'll discover where you have your failings, where your bad motives are, because you're not willing to try. That's always the ticket to finding bad motive. Where am I not willing to try? All right, then that's it, you know. You can come up with 20 excuses why I can't do that. It's always bad motive. All right, so we're just about out of time here. I want to make sure that I've made a lot of points in today's show. I can't summarize in the time I have left because some of these concepts are so complex at the end here. I kind of overran my time to do that. But let me explain this. Let me explain it from this standpoint. Each of us has the remarkable ability to be godlike in our service to this world. And it comes through reversing negative karma. Who would have thought today's show would be so revealing of so much when it seems like it's just three words, reversing negative karma. But it's true. And it's true because the embodiment of what is holding us back, our personality, is was constructed in a major way from our negative karma. Now, I know you can read Life's Hidden Meaning and other things, and I say in there that there's also positive things that we'll put into our personality. That's kind of true, but they all get manifested by the age of 28 through the development of our self, our lower self. And you can't claim they're part of the personality and the people who are mostly listening to tonight's show who are in the adult range, right? So for them, it would be true that what I'm saying is correct. Then it's really the negative karma that is what is existent of the personality, certainly as we reach spiritual adulthood, or about 28 years old. And even between 21 and 28, you can see the elements there that are the shadows that remain. So it's pretty clear that part of what I'm explaining is a big way to understand this issue. And it makes a huge difference in terms of where and how we are all going or not going in our lives. Also remember, waiting till you get to the astral world is like the biggest crazy idea, nonsense. I've been teaching this for years and nobody believes me. Oh, I'll do it after I die. Do what? What are you going to do after you die? You're going to lament, I guess. You're going to hurt. You're going to say, gee, I should have listened to that crazy guy on the radio. I wish I had done that. That would have been good. You know, all I can say is I repeat myself too many times about this. Don't wait. If you are breathing at all, stay breathing, stay alive here, and reverse your karma now. Every day you do it, you're going to make huge leaps and bounds in comparison to waiting to go to the astral world. You will understand when you get there if you haven't figured it out by listening to tonight's show or any other one. But that's too late. It's just too late. And believe me, by the mental world, it's a whole, you know, you'll be absolutely positive you screwed this up. And you'll lament about that, too. The bottom line is that now is the time. Now is the time. And I hope tonight's show has really helped you to see that. And if this has made sense to you, then I have done my job. And I know when you started tonight's show, you thought reversing negative karma was probably going to be do these 20 items. I knew a guy once that that's how he used to write his material. Do these 20 items, you'll get there. He even had a book that dealt with karma that way. When I tried to correct it for him, he didn't like me. So, some people think that that's the way you should get lessons. So do these things and everything will work. But reversing negative karma is reversing who and what you are. You're not a personality. You're not even a person. You're a soul who came here to be a soul, but is belabored by a personality that is mostly dark and over-controlling and selfish. That doesn't have to be who you remain to be. You have the every right and the responsibility to become the soul you came here to be. And I sure hope this has made a lot of difference for some people. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.